Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the entertainment stage this morning for this brilliant session, How Sound Tracking is Changing the Game for Brands, presented with our partners Epidemic Sound. My name's Katie Ingram. I am the director of Advertising Week Europe and hugely excited for day two. There is a packed schedule of content, but I'm really pleased that you've all chosen to spend some time with us this morning. We've got an amazing panel who I am going to let introduce themselves, but all of them sit at the intersection of music, sound and branding, which forms the basis for our discussion this morning. We're not going to take questions because there's so much to cover across the next kind of 28 minutes, but the team are all around, so you can feel free to catch up with anybody afterwards if you do have a burning question. So guys, I'm going to hand over to you to briefly introduce yourselves.
So I'm Sue Dawn. I'm the Executive Creative Director of Interbrand. Lucky enough to have worked with both of these lovely gentlemen here as well. So hopefully we'll share some of that today as well.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jules Passard. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at Epidemic Sound. And I'm based here in the UK. We've just opened a UK office this year. So we have a presence here. So shout out to the UK team who's here. It's really great to be here.
Nice. Hey, good morning, everyone. My name is Marijn Roosewond, and I'm currently as a freelancer working in the field of sonic branding. But before this, I worked at Massive Music as a creative strategy director for 8 years.
There's some brilliant cheerleaders for you guys in the room. What a nice position to be in. So let's get into it. I think when I was asked to present this panel this morning, I was really excited because there's actually, I think, a noticeable increase in panels and content this year around sound. And it's because it's so important. And one of the sessions I popped into yesterday over in the Culture Unleashed Lounge, which I hope many of you found, was all about music and culture. And they were the very first question they asked was, can anyone in the room raise their hands if they don't listen to music? Now, I'm not going to ask you to do that because none of you are going to raise your hands. That's exactly the point. And I think it's such an important point to make. So it feels instinctive that music is an important part of brands, but I'm going to throw to you guys, and I'll start with you, Jules. Just how important is it?
Well, we obviously think it's important because we're a sound tracking platform. It's
kind of important.
With high quality music. So that's, yeah, we come from that place. But we were talking just before we came in about one of my favorite Instagram channels was 1980s TV ads. Not everyone will remember the TV ads from the 1980s, but what was really interesting is what really resonated with me was the connection with the music. It wasn't actually necessarily the images or the videos I remembered growing up. It was actually the music and that connection. So if it was important 40 years ago, you think now about this sheer scale of the amount of consumption from users, that it's just become so important that you get this right. Just to give you some sense of that scale, I don't want to fire loads of statistics at you, but this one really stuck out to me, is that every day on YouTube and TikTok, there are 2.5 billion views where our music is on it, right? And that's just, and we're about 20% of it. So there's another 80% on top of that. So the sheer scale and volume per day, almost a trillion views a year, means that you have to sit upright and be attentive to music. And I'm sure Sue and Marion will agree with that.
Yeah, nice.
That's huge scale. I had no idea of the sheer numbers. That's incredible.
Yeah, I think the benefit of music for brands is really twofold. Because I think, first of all, you have the standard recall, where you really focus on ownable audio assets like sound logos or intros to podcasts or maybe even UI sounds for certain devices. So that really helps shape, okay, this is the sound that you want to associate it with your brand. But I think what we see more and more is also the storytelling element, the consistency in music and in that itself being a form of sonic branding, music strategy. Because I think, you know, there's research as well that people gravitate towards brands that they resonate with. And I think music is such an emotional, powerful tool that a brand can use music to illustrate what they stand for and what kind of emotion they want to evoke. And then people gravitate towards that more easily as well.
See, what's your take?
Well, I think also, I mean, building on Jules's point, I mean, I think so much music out there for brands, distinctiveness is incredibly difficult. And you only have to kind of think about the sheer quantity when we're working with brands. You know, it's very easy to slip into genericism, and especially when you've got kind of CEOs or marketing directors choosing music without any good advice from people who know what they're talking about, they can fall into the kind of same old, and it just gets lost in the melee of brands. And without brand, without music within a brand identity, it kind of is missing a kind of key component part, because we're on screens all the time, two or three at a time. Sometimes the music is the only thing that's cutting through to make you pay attention. And so it has to be completely distinctive and differentiating. So
we were talking also about when there's a big upside to getting it right, but there's also a downside when you get it wrong. Mm. And you can see when music jars with the imagery, with the video, it really is something that puts consumers off. And yeah,
that's probably something we'll pick up on shortly. It feels like it's going to be important, but is it essential? Is it essential for a brand to absolutely develop a brand, a sound strategy?
Yes, we'd argue again, funny enough. I think perhaps there's two lenses. I mean, you are probably missing a trick, a big trick, and I'm sure that these guys will elucidate on that. But it's a kind of long-term dimension and a short-term dimension. I think the long-term dimension is how you build out that long-term brand equity and connection with folks over the long term. But then there's also the very short term. It drives it because we're in a digital, no surprise to anyone, we're in a much more digital world than we were in the broadcast world. There's a lot of optimization and opportunity to use data as well as intuition to create more success. So I think making your whole asset more successful, music is kind of a foundational stone of that.
Data and sound together, that's a new pairing for me, data and sound.
I think it's underplayed, right? So especially for brands, quite often they leave it very late in the game to think about music. It can be an afterthought. And today, with so much content being created, if it's not honed and kind of framed in the right way, you'll end up with 100 different types of sound, which doesn't land in the cohesion. And it can also be like, it can be the spark, right? It can be the actual start point. You know, when we did Squeak, which was a basketball game, the sound was the inspiration. The squeak of a trainer on a court, that was everything. And I think it's sometimes put at the end of a process. And so many of the times we're having conversations with the clients about, think about the music, think about the motion, think about the identity as a whole, right up front, because it can actually make an identity system better. And when you get to do the launch film or you get to do the social content, the music's there and you haven't got the CEO's wife choosing the music, which is also a little bit of a nerve-wracking moment when she goes, I like take that.
Well, this CEO's husband as well.
I feel like that was some lived experience. We just felt
his husband, yeah.
Do you have a similar...
Yeah, I think indeed it's a missed opportunity if brands don't. Because I think, you create all the guidelines, you create the color, you create the typography, you create the image bank. Then why not think about music to also give that extra element? And I think it's also a nice question. Like if you picture your brand, what kind of sound comes to mind? What kind of band, what kind of genre, what kind of instruments, what kind of tempo? And I think, the additional part is also, I think a lot of brands sometimes have issues sourcing the right music. So they fall into indeed pitfalls of using low quality music, or even worse, they use music that they should not have used because it's not licensed. Mm. Or they use music that they can only use for a few months and then they have to take everything offline again. So I think doing it up front just saves you a lot of hassle.
I'm picking up on that point on the license. I'm reasonably new into the music industry, but I didn't realize till I got into it the absolute complexities of licensing. What a nightmare. So it's almost kind of understandable that it's been a bit of an afterthought. And that's obviously where companies like us are trying to solve that problem with the license. Have a really flexible license where you can use it across any geo or any type of usage that you want. Removing that as an obstacle, as a sort of a bulletproof license, allows you then to kind of innovate a bit more. But that has traditionally, I think, held people up. I don't know if...
I can see how that would be. But my background is marketing as well. And sometimes you do get into that kind of spiral of, I just need something that's license free. I just like, and you lose sight of the quality or the suitability. So I can see how that must be a real benefit.
And also there's a bit of a dichotomy, I think, between people assume license, low risk license means low quality music. Well, that's not true. I can certainly talk from our company's perspective. We've got Grammy award winning artists, very high quality artists. The business model has changed. So we own the music outright. So we've got 40,000 tracks of music, what we own completely. So that means as a partner or a customer, it means that they don't have to worry about that. You know, they can take away that risk. And I think that's been a, I guess, an industry impediment in the past.
I think we sort of skirted around it a little bit here, but there are some brilliant examples of when you get it right. But I feel like there's probably danger and pitfalls, and you could very easily get it wrong just from some of the things that you've been talking about there. Is that something you kind of, you can highlight where brands could get it wrong?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you, what you see now is that there's indeed a craving for authenticity. And I think what a lot of brands sometimes forget is that there are certain cliches within industries. So, for example, with the insurance industry, we saw a big value that people wanted to communicate was being carefree. And a lot of people started using whistling or ukuleles or this sort of like easygoing music. But if you would look at the ads after each other, they would all sound the same. And I think, you know, during COVID, a lot of sympathy ads came out, like provoke, like how do you say, like evoking sympathy. And then you heard a lot of minimal neoclassical piano tracks. And I think by taking a step back and really trying to think, okay, what makes my brand different and how can I use music to illustrate this? Well, yeah, you have so much to gain in the end.
So that's really interesting. A kind of a cultural or a social moment, you can start to see trends developing and it becomes a bit of kind of a homogenous mass. There's, you lose the distinctive brand identity.
Yeah, yeah, I think music is a universal language. I think we all have our own relationship with music, but we also interpret similar sounds in a similar manner. I think the nice research is the one on Kiki and Booba, where you had a star-shaped figure and a round-shaped figure. And then people were asked, okay, associate a sound with one of these two figures. And the first was like, ka-ka-ka, like a very sharp sound. And the other was like, woof, like a very warm, round sound. And then I think 99% of the people associate the sharp sound with the pointy figure and vice versa.
That's fascinating. And the moment you said it, it just makes so much sense, but I haven't necessarily thought about it like that. Jules, have you got examples or pitfalls to look out for as well?
What with the music jarring? Or
how it could get, where people could potentially get it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, just as a consumer, we're all consumers, right? Just thinking about some of the things I've watched recently, I don't know why, but they've all been set in London or people coming into London. And I swear the music track was London Calling by The Clash in all three of those things. Which is great. Yes, it's very literal, but it didn't seem very original. It didn't seem very with the moment and a little bit cliched. So I think there's always that danger. You were talking about that, Sue, about avoiding kind of cliches.
I saw a piece, Gucci did it for their 75th anniversary of the bamboo handle, right? And they harnessed machine learning and orchestral music, right? Really unexpected when you think that they were targeting a Gen Z audience, and it was just genius. But what we often, and you know, I think the clever mix of music and unexpectedness, as Jules said, is really key. But what we see with brands is they'll do it in the minute, they'll do the one thing, they'll do the launch, and then they forget this has got to be something that lasts forever. And although they need new and exciting and different music to keep things fresh, it needs to feel authentic, as Jules says, and it needs to be set in a parameters.
So. There's a real craft to it. What is the successful?
Well, you go to experts. Don't ask.
As
like
in everything.
Me. I mean, I think what's quite interesting, and I've certainly learned a lot from these guys in the business, is that you have to go in with your eyes completely open, and you can't go in with what you think is the sound, and like you learn and listen. And you know, Marion's example of kind of shapes, we've gone through that exercise on programs together, and it's quite hilarious. You have to be quite okay and unembarrassed in the session as well, but you learn a lot together about going through a journey. But you also get the clients involved, get them on the learning process, get them to understand music and sound and the kind of parameters of the sound, not just the end goal. And I think setting those down and then working with tracks and playlists and kind of principles helps us to kind of give them something that's got longevity. And, you know, that's where working with Jules and the team has really come into a different era of music, which has been phenomenal.
I think it's also mixing the art and the science a little bit as well. So we have like a music curation team. So these are folks who are much more expert than me in terms of music. They're with what's going on right now, what's going on and coming up in the future is important. And they're, you know, really helping partner with the client and or the agency, and a genuine partnership, an ongoing partnership to help them with the sound. But that's the human, the art side of it. But then there's also the scale, right? Because of digital channels, you're getting these billions of views per day. You're getting a lot of data and information, right? So you can extrapolate from that. For those who are more interested in the quantitative side, you know, what works well if you're a hotel on YouTube, right, as an ad? You know, what types of music are they using? How is that deviating? What works for an unboxing video in electronics? What works in, you know, so you start to marry these two things together. And then to the point about strategy, you've got this more as a thing you're coming at from the very front end of the process. But I think you're much more of an expert on the process.
You've got some insight on the actual process.
Yeah, the processes.
Yeah. So, well, the way that I've approached it for many years is actually it's always quite similar to any process. So you have a research, an actual composition, production, and a rollout amplification. But I think what's interesting is where in the research part, you really try to translate all your musical insights on three layers. First of all, the function, like where and how can the sound actually help the brand the best? This could be different for many brands. Sometimes it's an opener or UI sound, or is it a sound logo? What's the visual animation it needs to work with? Consumer demographics you're trying to approach, you know, longevity or different product categories. I've worked for Philips, for example, where you had hospital stories, but you were also selling air fryers targeted kids with Minions, different sound. How do you create something that's flexible enough melodically to cater to both sounds? Once you have the where and how the sound can help, you need to look at the aesthetic as well. And I think this is more like your color palette in sound and music. So it's again, you know, you do these sessions with clients and of course with the brand guardians, the agencies as well. Like, okay, you say you're heroic, you say you're red or you're bold and future forward, innovative. How do we translate that into music? And usually we use a lot of interactive, like we play a lot of sounds. Heroic, is it big intervals? Is it big drums? Or is it more like bold? How do you say, like silent, like being a little more intimate and therefore being very bold? And that's where you try to also test the water. And then the third one, so function aesthetic would be, I think, concept. Again, because how do you make it that's really unique to the brand? So for Kathmandu, we worked with a guy who made bird whistles in the Alps. Kathmandu is an outdoor brand, and we found this guy also. He worked with Björk on their latest album, and we integrated these sounds to just make something unique. But we also worked with Calvin Klein, where we really were, okay, sensual minimalism. How do we create a style for their playlist in stores that really no other brand can claim? So if you have function, aesthetic, and concept, I think that's the best way to plot a sonic brand.
And you were saying outside, I could listen to you for ages on this stuff because it's an area that,
yeah,
it's really fascinating. Yeah. You were talking about the Netflix with the Squid Games, with the sound, the Gregorian chant.
Yeah. I'm singing too much probably, but I'm not a great singer. The Squid Game guys, they triggered something because they had the da 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 da, and that's actually a Gregorian chant from the 1300s. It's like Memento Mori, which then a lot of composers use that theme to illustrate when death. So The Shining has it. Da, 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 da. But also White Lotus uses it like in there. And that sort of like the use of those themes in film scores is actually widely common. But the Squid Game Memento Mori, yeah, it's great.
We talked a lot about music, but there's also sound effects, right? Yeah. For example, we got 90,000 sound effects. So it's amazing how much depth of sound effects. But we have people who go out and not just create them on computer, but go and take microphones into the middle of the Antarctic. And what is the sound of an ice pick, you know, actually? And then they record those. There's videos of this stuff online. So really authentic sounds. You can have a lot of fun with them. Not everyone uses the sound effects, but it's a fascinating area. I think it's an area where I think marketers really want to...
I think we're so primed to listening that even short sound effects contain a wealth of information.
Yeah.
Think about just like the Google Home or the Apple Pay sound and all those small sounds. I think that's, you know, we're getting better at listening and sounds will probably even get shorter and snappier.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. So everybody will be aware that attention spans are shortening because of the way that we consume so much. So it does feel like actually sound attention is being like, you need to consider that as well. That's a really interesting point I hadn't thought about. We've talked quite a lot about the process and the reasons why. And I think it's always brilliant to bring some of this stuff to life with an example. And so you've got a great example from, I guess, a sector that you might not necessarily associate sound with. I think we've sort of talked about entertainment and those kind of things, but you've got an example from the energy sector.
Yeah, so we're working with an energy business, you know, not in the UK, but, you know, we're doing the identity with them. They needed to, so we knew they're going to need sonic and sound, right? So we kind of went to them with a couple of traditional approaches and Epidemic. And we were kind of thinking, God, they're going to need way more than just a couple of things. They're in so many different countries, localization. And spoke with Jules and the team and tried to kind of understand how we could put something together. And we've been working with them to create playlists for them, to give them the principles. So we did a sort of session together where we kind of, much like Maren was talking, lots of that weird singing going on, built out a playlist, tried to kind of understand the genre that we were building in, went away, built out a kind of a sort of playlist that then they've got something that they can choose from. And I think what was new for them is they can go in and sort of almost, excuse my ignorance in how I'm going to explain this, hack about the music. And that's the beauty.
That's the technical term.
That's the technical term. You can go in, chunk bits out, find bits that sound similar. So to the erosion of sort of our attention span, you can have a tiny little bit of music, a longer piece of music, or an even longer piece of music, really trying to kind of tap into that. And that was so liberating for them. I think it's helped them to kind of see they don't have to feel like so constrained with like one song because of that attention span. We get bored so quickly. We need more than that. So,
and it can be quite daunting because like with 40,000 music tracks, it's a lot.
Yeah, where,
and we keep adding, we're adding like 100 every week, right? So it's a little bit daunting. Could put you off, right, with self-choice. Yeah. So I think that's why you need the curation assistance, but then also technology. How can you find tracks that are like other tracks or other like other artists?
But they start same way anything. They do mood boards, musical mood boards for us that comes and like you can see the kind of plethora of sounds and feels, and it's through conversation and discussion, lots of listening. And
And I guess some instinct as well. There must be, as you said, there must be some instinctive that feels right, that doesn't feel right in that, in those early stages as well.
Yeah, you said this, in gut we trust. But I think we're inherently primed to react to music a certain way. But also what Sue said, I think the worst thing you can have is the CEO or the CEO's wife come in and say like, hey, I like trumpet.
Or husband, as you also.
Yeah. So I think you need to leave your own subjectivity and just really approach it from a brand first perspective. But then there's definitely some ground level associations you can work with always.
But I guess if we're going back 40 years ago, you get that one chance to stick the track on the ad, right?
Yeah.
Now you can try all these variations and play around with it so much. So we're in a space now where it allows for a lot more testing and optimization, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so the various, the kind of multi-channels, and it's actually an advantage because you do get to test and learn as you go.
And also personalized to a degree, I think.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I think also like the sonic branding is not using one sound, one track on each and every execution. I think that's very constrictive and doesn't do the creative any good. So I think, usually it's the brand or product you're trying to communicate, the target audience, and the actual narrative of the story that you're trying to tell. And if you hit those three and with enough music and still find a red thread, I think then you're building a brand through music.
Yeah, I think it's getting away from this one track mind, as a cliche. But it's much more thinking about, I guess, music as a palette. A tool set. You need the music, and you need the ability to use the music and access to the music and lots of genres. Like we've got 160 genres. I couldn't probably name more than 20.
I was going to say,
and subgenres. So it's a lot of niches and areas. And then you've got, for brands that are global, music resonates differently in different cultures. So,
well, so, and that was something I was, the kind of next point really. Obviously, brands need to have some longevity and there needs to be a kind of a framework that you build on, and it works over time. You need to build that. So how do you create? So we're doing the testing and learning. You've got the initial stages in the process. How do you then kind of push that forward and make it work over time?
I think, putting good foundations in place, like any brand and all the assets that you go in, put into a brand, it needs strong foundations. So you need to codify what you mean by music. But of course, culture comes into play and music does change. So it needs to evolve, but it needs to fit. Is it really super pacey? Is it instrumental? Does it feel like it's always going up? There are traits you can build into sound. But there are always sounds that you can put into a brand that just throw you completely, and they just, you just know for a fact that it's going to disrupt. And you kind of need to be open for that as well along the process, because you need something that's going to wake people up. And so I think whilst all the world you can put kind of premises in place, you also need to kind of let freedom to come in on sort of tracks that just, especially on campaigns, that are just going to really cut through.
And I guess if there's strategic changes for the brand, you need something that kind of feels recognisable, yeah, but then also you can disrupt, yeah, along the way as, yeah, well. Are there any kind of danger points for longevity?
Don't be hip for the sake of being hip.
Okay.
I think you see brands...
Try hard.
Yeah, trying hard, or slapping an artist, or licensing a track just because the track is hip. And that can also backfire, because the brand, especially Gen Z, really craves authenticity, and you can almost be seen as a culture vulture. So I think, you know, definitely, yeah, try to be authentic from the brand, and then see which music culture or subculture genre is best for you. Instead of like, oh, I just need a... get the biggest artist or the biggest track at this moment.
I think authenticity is something I'm hearing so much across sessions in the last couple of days. And there was a session in here this morning that was artists talking about themselves as brands, which was the kind of the reverse of what we're doing here. But they were talking about how if they are working with a brand and it feels inauthentic, it will just get called out straight away. And so it works both ways. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, Marin and I worked on a piece of work for a health business, and, you know, we had a lot of options on the table, a lot of options. And it was only when they came up with the idea of harnessing the sound of the people to sing, and we felt, you know, it really landed perfectly. And I think that's when, you know, you get that sort of sense of what you need. It's like, it's this little epiphany of genius that comes
through. High five across the, yeah, metaphorical high,
yeah,
five.
So good.
So we recorded, it was a new brand that was launched, and we recorded 300 of the employees singing through a digital website we built, karaoke, which kind of freaked out the sound engineer I was working with, because it was 300 people singing in the worst horrible keys.
Can we try that now?
Or? Yeah.
The Advertising Week choir. There we go.
Yeah, yeah.
The plan for later.
But it did indeed help. So it became, yeah, like an encouraging anthem, an encouraging vocal sound to encourage people to improve their health. And the story really clicked. Yeah,
really resonated.
So we are rapidly running out of time. So I'm going to ask you all for a super quick answer just as we close. But so what's the future? What does the future hold for music and content? We'll go down the line. I'll start with you, Sid.
Well, I mean, you can't get away from AI. AI is going to play a role. It's already playing a role in certain of the platforms that we're kind of working with. I'm so excited to see where it takes it, because I think it teaches us a lot as well. So I think in sound, it's only going to get more interesting.
Great answer.
Yeah, I don't think you could have a panel at this place without talking about AI. Must be.
But, it is illegal, actually. Yeah,
it's in everyone's
absolute
mandate.
Yeah.
I think our belief is in human music, but augmented by AI. So we think, and who knows, when the robots take over, we might be proven wrong. But we feel that the AI tooling, in particular with music, just supercharges the creativity. And those two things can have a really good marriage. And yeah,
lovely.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we went from the age of four-track recording, everyone playing instruments, to sampling. And now with Splice, everything's kind of loop-based, and you can source all your sounds online. And we're probably now going to the era where the human is the conductor and AI is the entire orchestra to easily edit, adjust, create sounds. So I think, yeah, it's still human driven, but AI is going to supercharge it.
That super positive AI perspective from all of you, which is is fabulous. I don't know about you guys, but I just want to pin everybody down and ask them loads more, but we are out of time. So a huge round of applause for our panel, please.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek, and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcanda, the audio conference solution.